Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Horror, Wine, and Crime. We are KK and Lo with you today. Oh, the pop early. Love it.
It's trying to be dramatic.
I love it. What are we drinking tonight, Lo?
Well, you know me. It's a Smirnoff. And it's like a can. And it's zero sugar. But this one's lemon lime. I think the lemon lime one's probably one of my favorite ones.
Can't go wrong with lemon lime. That's always a good flavor. Well, we love it. We love the pop always, the pop of the can.
Yes, ma'am. And it's one of those days where I might need a pop, maybe pop another, maybe another. I don't know. We'll see how the night goes.
Ooh, triple pop. Damn. I'll just edit all of them together.
All right.
Well, I see a note that Lo added on our document for tonight, and I'm Lo. Should I be scared? What's going on?
Curiosity is killing the cat over there because she's like, "Why is Bestie Boo saying we are not close? And why is she breaking up with me online? And why is she telling me before she does it?"
Literally, I open the doc, and at the top, I just see "we are not close," and I'm like, "What's happening? What's going on? Is this a show, or what's going on?"
Let me explain myself. So y'all know that we're fans of the Armchair Show, so which means we also listen to some of the spinoffs. I've grown to like Synced, which is Monica's show with one of her gal pals, right? And so I listened to that. Then I recently started Just a Little Shady.
Oh, I don't think I've heard of that.
It's Haley Jade's. It's Slim Shady's daughters.
Oh, okay. Yes. I have seen clips of it, but I've never like fully listened to it.
I thought I'd give it a try because it's another two girls and maybe I'd get some tea on what Marshall's doing. She doesn't want to talk about it much, which understandably because she probably wants to be herself, not Marshall's daughter, you know?
Right. Yeah. Have her own brand going.
But, you know, I'm listening maybe for some selfish reasons, maybe not. I don't know. Anyway. So on both of these podcasts that I've listened to, this conversation has came up twice. And I'm like, really? So what they are saying is that they don't hug their besties or their girlfriends like every time they show up to their house, or they said a lot of times they don't even hug their family because they're so close with them. And that the closer you are, the less frequently you hug. And I'm sitting here thinking, I'm like, I always hug you hello and goodbye.
I don't stand by that because I hug my mom and my sister. I hug literally like all of them every time I see them and every time I leave. And so I hug you every time. I feel like I hug people I'm closer with, and the people that I feel like kind of like, I don't know. I don't hug them. I kind of play it out and see how they feel. Like, I'm like, oh, are they going in for a hug? Then I guess I'll go in for a hug. But I'm never like initiating a hug with people I'm not super close to.
Okay. That's the page that I was on. Okay. And I'm sitting here thinking like, I hug you more than I probably do some of my family members. But I also feel like I'm probably closer to you than some of my family members. You know?
Yeah, like I hug all the people that I'm closest to every time I see them. So I do not stand by what they're saying.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't crazy because Monica said it on her show and then Haley said it on her show and all the people were like, they were co-signing it. And I'm like, they're like, yeah, if our friend that we haven't seen, like, you know, all the time comes over, then we get more excited and say, oh, give me a hug. But if it's a friend that comes over, like, all the time, like, I don't give them a hug. Now, I could understand, I guess, if you came over my house, like, every single day because you lived next door.
Right, yeah.
Like, I probably wouldn't hug you every time I seen you if you lived next door. You know, that might be a little excessive. But we hang out, at least we try to, you know, at least once a week if our schedules happen to sync up.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm always excited. Like when you come in, I'm like, hey, girl, I give you a hug, you know, and then it's like, hey, girl, drive safe, love you, give you a hug, goodbye, you know?
Right.
So I don't know. I just wanted to kind of bring that up. I was like, am I not close with Crystal? Because I feel like she's like my closest female person.
Yeah, no, I don't co-sign what they're saying. Because at least for me, I mean, I guess everybody's different with hugs, which is so true because, like, you know, some people are huggers, some people aren't. I'm definitely a hugger. Like, I hug everybody that I'm like, that I feel close to because I feel comfortable to like give them hugs every time I see them. Now, there are like other people where I just kind of play it by ear. Like, I just see like what they do. And then like I decide if we're like going in for a hug or not. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. And are we at the bar? How many drinks in are we? Are we at the point where we love everybody because we've had four now?
Oh, right. Yeah. Like, am I hugging random girls in bathrooms? Like, what's happening now?
Right.
But yeah, it's so true. Like, I don't know. If at least for me, I'm a hugger. So I feel like I hug the people that I'm closest to. Okay. But if you're, I can totally see it. If you're not a hugger, like, you're going to be like, why would I hug them all the time? Do you know what I mean? Right. So I guess it just depends on the person.
Okay.
Me, I'm a hugger. I'm a lover.
I'm a lover, not a fighter.
Yeah, exactly. So I can confirm that we are close. Okay.
Okay.
So I am, I don't know if you are looking, but I am deleting your note right now.
You want to take it down? You're like, I don't even want to see that shit.
I'm deleting it because it's false.
That's funny. You know, and I actually typed it last week and we had so many like hot topics that I forgot to even bring it up.
Oh, so, I didn't even see it last week. That's so funny. I didn't even notice then it.
Today when I was at work, I'm like, dude, I really want to approach this. So I made sure that I typed it above your story.
That is hilarious. Yeah, I saw it and I was like, what's going down? What's happening? That's funny. Oh yeah, today's kind of a cluster of a few different things going on. I bashed together, mashed together, not bashed.
Well, bashed, we might do some aggressive bashing. You never know.
Some bashing, some mashing, all the above. But first order of business that I wanted to kind of give an update on because it's pretty recent, and obviously we all know the Menendez brothers case is a very hot topic right now. We kind of discussed it in our previous, like what, like three episodes ago, four episodes ago, something like that, when we were talking about did America get it right. Well, now there's a little bit of an update in their case since there's been so much media attention flocking to it. So I kind of wanted to touch on that for a minute.
Yeah, I didn't stop and read, but I saw they were on the face of People magazine. So, I mean, obviously stuff is spreading.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so do you not know?
I don't. So let's, I'm gonna get filled in as you tell the creepies. So I'm just going to be a creepy right now.
All right, great. I cannot wait to get your reaction then.
Live creepy.
yes, live reaction. So obviously they've been in prison for more than three decades at this point. You know, they were sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. But now there's a little bit of glimmer of hope at the end of their tunnel. So LA District Attorney George Gascon, just this past Thursday, he spoke to the public. He also filed a motion recommending that a judge resentence Eric and Lyle. So this decision was the culmination of a review that came after defense attorneys said last year in 2023 that they had new evidence pointing to abuse by their father, which obviously was the letter that Eric had wrote to his cousin talking about the abuse years and years ago. So Gascon, he spoke to the public. He also spoke to obviously some like news outlets as well. He told CNN I will never excuse murder, and those were brutal, premeditated murders. They were appropriately sentenced at the time when they were tried. They got life without the possibility of parole. I just think that given the current state of the law and given our reassessment of their behavior in prison, they deserve the opportunity to be reevaluated and perhaps reintegrated into the community. So within 30 to 45 days, a hearing on the matter could be held, and a LA Superior Court judge will ultimately have to decide whether the brothers will be resentenced. But Gascon, he said he supports the resentencing of the brothers to life with the possibility of parole, which normally would mean 50 years to life in prison. But because the crimes happened when the brothers were under 26 years old, they would be eligible for youthful parole under California law. And Gascon says that the brothers have been model prisoners. He believes that there's a good chance they would be paroled if the decision reaches the parole board. And he hopes that they'll be home by Thanksgiving, which is crazy because that's coming up super duper quick.
Yeah. I'm wondering if also too, Kim Kardashian's impact letter, because that was a strong letter.
That was very strong. And it really was talked about and very publicized. So I feel like between her letter, the documentary that came out, the TV show that came out, like just all of the chatter, and then like obviously the new evidence of the letter, I think really is just all like coming together to like push forward, you know, just some new like hope for them.
Yeah. Maybe too with the new witness actually speaking up saying, yes, it happened to me.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So his reexamination, Gascon's, of the case, again, came after attorneys for the Menendez brothers filed a habeas corpus petition in 2023 with this new evidence, as well as a recent California law on resentencing in which the court can take into consideration sentences in comparable cases. So in the motion filed by Gascon, the district attorney laid out details about the brothers' rehabilitation efforts in prison during a time when they had no reason to believe that they would be released. So basically, he's just saying, like, you know, they've been very, like, proactive and positive members while being in prison. Like, they've been in different like programs and outreach things to help other people, as well as like being helpful in prison as well. And it's like, that shows, like, I don't know, my dog is crying. I don't know if you guys can hear him. He's right next to my face and the microphone. he's very excited about this news. but they've just been like model prisoners, as Gascon says, which they don't have to be because they had no chance of getting parole that they knew of. So it just kind of shows like the goodness inside of them. So yeah, they're hoping that they will be home by Thanksgiving. And after the official recommendation by Gascon was filed, Nancy Thaberg, who is the deputy in charge of his resentencing unit, said that the unit will begin coordinating with the defense and court staff to set dates for the next proceedings. Once a hearing date is set, the defense can decide whether to have the brothers physically in the courtroom or appear just video conference. And all arguments and evidence will be admitted, and the judge will make a ruling based on what is presented. She said, we are just starting the process. Separate from the resentencing recommendation, the habeas corpus petition filed last year is scheduled to be heard just next month in November. So if the defense team agrees with the DA's resentencing request, they could withdraw the petition, which would also, you know, not really matter if the court agrees to a resentencing. So a little bit of positive news could be a nice little thing for them if they do, if it does get approved and they are able to go on parole, they'll be able to be with their wives and like be out of prison at least until their resentencing, you know, trial comes about, which who knows how long that will take. So could be a positive piece of information for them, but we'll see, I guess, what happens within the next month when they have the hearing and everything.
I'm sure everybody will be tuned in.
Oh yeah, for sure. But yeah, I just thought I would spread that news since, you know, big popular story at the moment. Yes,
and while your story is super important details, my brain was like, what I was thinking was, no one's slick as Gaston, no one's quick as Gaston. No
okay, wait, I thought the same thing when I read it.
Gaston. And I was just singing the Gaston song in my head.
I get it. No, because I literally thought the same thing when I, because I had first seen it, the video of him talking like on TikTok, and then I read his name and then somebody else had said it in a different video. And I literally thought the same thing. I'm like, even though it's like Gascon and the other one's Gaston, they sound like literally exactly the same.
Yeah.
So funny. Now this next one, I was gonna talk about this one last week. So this was the one that shifted to this week, and it gives off, for me at least, major like just Diddy, Jeffrey Epstein, Harvey Weinstein vibes. Just powerful person in charge, taking advantage sexually and in other ways of people. So it kind of gave off those vibes for me.
Okay, well, let's get into the meat.
Yep. So Mike Jeffries, who is the former CEO of Abercrombie & Fitch, he has been indicted on 16 federal counts of sex trafficking and international prostitution in New York, and is accused of leveraging a network of employees, contractors, and security professionals while he led Abercrombie & Fitch. So he was a busy boy, right?
Isn't there a song with Abercrombie & Fitch in it?
Probably, but I don't know.
I think there is, but anyways, we'll keep it serious for a minute. But it's just, you know, my brain. I have ADHD brain, right? So I hear
Amber. I'm sure there is a song that mentions.
I feel like it's like some pop boy band something with Abercrombie and Fitch.
I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if there was a song mentioning them, because it is a pretty popular brand.
Their stuff is expensive too. Am I not wrong?
Oh yeah, no. I would always. I know I haven't shopped there in years, but when I did, when I was a teenager,
we probably outgrew it.
Yeah, when I was a teenager, I would shop there quite a bit, and I would go immediately to the clearance racks. Same with Hollister; that was my go-to place. So Mike Jeffries, he was using all of this power that he had being the CEO, and he was obviously very wealthy because Abercrombie & Fitch, very successful company. But he used all of that with his influence to the company to traffic men for just his own sexual pleasure. And his partner, Matthew Smith, so his boyfriend, he was also involved in all of this with Mike as well. So Matthew Smith, his boyfriend, he was from West Palm Beach, Florida, along with Mike Jeffries, the CEO, and then another guy named James Jacobson. They were also indicted as part of the case because it was kind of like they just worked together to do all of this. So Jacobson was employed by Jeffries and Smith to recruit, interview, and hire men to perform commercial sex acts for both Jeffries and Smith. So he was like their recruitment guy, which is just crazy that anybody would like agree to a position like that. But
well, it's kind of like the chick for Epstein. What was her name?
Yeah. Oh shoot.
We're good at this.
Gosh, I see her face, but I can't think of her name.
Yeah, she almost looks like the Kardashian, but not.
Yeah, she looks like Kris Jenner. What the heck is her name? That is gonna bother me. I'm gonna look it up. It's like Jeline or something.
Yes, Jeline Maxwell. It's yeah, like Maxenny
because she... Maxwell. If that's how you pronounce it, whatever.
Yeah. So, anyways, that's how I feel like these guys were to Jeffries.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're just achy people, basically. So the indictment alleges that between December 2008 and March 2015, Jeffries, Smith, and Jacobson engaged in a sex trafficking scheme in which they would recruit men, engage in sex events, at which the alleged victims were given muscle relaxants known as poppers. They were given alcohol, lubricant, Viagra, and condoms to perform these sex acts. They were allegedly enticed into the acts with modeling and career opportunities at Abercrombie. So that's why it kind of gave me like Harvey Weinstein vibes, just because like it was like, oh, we're dangling your dreams in front of you. If you want them, you have to do these disgusting things for us, basically. So Jeffries did step down as CEO of Abercrombie and Fitch in December of 2014. He ran the company since 1992, so he was there for a long time. And within that time, Jeffries and Smith paid for dozens of men to travel within the United States and internationally to different like locations, including the Hamptons, New York City, hotels in England, France, Italy, Morocco, St. Bartholomew. I don't even know what that is. So rich, and I'm not so rich, so I don't even know what that place is. But they flew all these guys to all these like places just for the purpose of engaging in different sex acts with them. And some of the men were allegedly paid to attend not just one, but multiple different of these like sex events. And that's where the Diddy reminder comes in, because it makes me think of his, what are those parties called? The
freak-off parties.
The freak-off parties. So they were having like their own version of that. But yeah, everything came to light and all three defendants were arrested. Jeffries himself was released on a $10 million bond. So crazy. Jacobson was released on a $500,000 bond, and Smith was ordered to be detained. They will be arraigned in the Eastern District of New York. Now, Jacobson's alleged role was to travel the world to recruit and interview men for these sex events and conduct tryouts of potential candidates. It's like, how does that, what does a tryout consist of for that? But he would typically require that the candidates first engage in sex acts with him before he sent them to Jeffries and Smith, which is just so sick.
Yeah.
And Jeffries and Smith, they hired a separate household staff to supervise these parties and directed the men to wear costumes, use sex toys, or prepare for just like different sex acts. And the staff would also act as security and controlled who entered and left these events. And they would not let these people leave until Jeffries and Smith decided that the events were over. So it was like they were almost holding these people hostage too. The accused were alleged to have used a referral system and interview process for the sex events, but they didn't disclose details to the men about what they would be doing. You know, like they didn't give them the full extent and nature of like the sexual activity that would they would have to do. And some of that included anal intercourse, like using different sex toys, like
ew,
and other objects. So like these men didn't really fully even know what they were getting themselves into. I mean, within the interview process, I'm sure they kind of had an idea, like obviously because of how the interviews sounded like they went, but they didn't know exactly how these events would go. And I feel like a lot of people, you know, being drugged and then held hostage and then like doing all these things, it's just sick that, you know, they weren't fully like participating themselves. You know, it was kind of a little bit forced, I feel like.
A little bit.
Right. I mean, because they agreed for like to do things in the interview because they would get modeling jobs and stuff. But I mean, once they got to these events, they had no idea like exactly what was going to go down.
Yep. Things probably escalated real quick.
Exactly. So the...
And I mean, it's Amber Khan being Fitch. Like, I get it. It's a modeling gig. But it's not like...
Right. Like, it's not like Calvin Klein.
Well, I was going to say even a spot in a new up and coming movie by, you know, a hot director that's going to launch it. You know what I mean? Like,
right. Yeah.
You'd be on the poster, you'd be on the billboards. Like, I don't know. I guess maybe I can't really speak because for some people that could take off, you know, it starts as modeling. I mean, and it could.
Right. That's true. Like, it could just be like a really good, like, starting point for them, maybe they thought, like, get their face out there, I guess.
But it's just sad that people's insecurities, and that's what Jeffrey's played on, is their insecurities, that they feel like they have to sink to that level to be worth being in, you know, a window model.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that is really sad. Another thing, too, that kind of was interesting and horrible to me. I mean, it's horrible no matter what like sexual preference the men were, but they really intentionally recruited straight guys, which is odd because, you know, they're performing like gay sexual acts at these parties. So it's like interesting that they specifically chose straight men for this. And these men were also like physically groomed prior to the sex parties, so they had to shave their genitals like without any advance notice, and they were required to give away all their personal items when they got there, including their clothing, their wallets, their cell phones. So they really like were stripped down in every single sense, really. Yeah. And on more than one occasion, the indictment says that Jeffries and Smith directed others to inject or personally inject men with a drug for the purpose of causing the men to engage in sex acts, in which they were otherwise physically incapable or unwilling. So obviously, I feel like it's kind of hinting at what that means, like these injections frequently cause the men to suffer painful physical reactions that lasted for several hours, apparently.
Like, when are we going to wake up to the world and not have a big company, a music person, a director, somebody? Like, I feel like every month it's something new of sex trafficking or pedophilia or rape or a sex assault. Like, it's just getting really, really sad.
It really is. And it's just like, it's still, it's just shocking. Like, you would think at this point it wouldn't be shocking anymore with how much it's happened, but it's still just like so wild to me that this amount of like just gross, terrible behavior is going on. And it just also makes me think like, oh my gosh, there's just so much more going on in the world that we don't know about and that we'll never know about.
And you can say what you want, but I do feel like Victoria's Secret, they've got some secrets that still hasn't come out. I watched the documentary and I think that guy is still a little more dirty than he got pinned with.
Oh, 100%. Like, I feel like there's so much more.
He got out unscathed. Okay. Epstein took the hit on that. Okay. And now he's dead. So there is no more coming after. I mean, maybe if they find his, if they ever come up with that list and have proof. But I feel like Victoria's Secret, like, it's almost like they got away with something.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there's definitely darker, deeper layers in that company as well. And I would be like, I would kind of be shocked if there wasn't, you know what I mean?
For sure. Especially those models, because they were pinpoint to be, you had to be like a flawless, like.
Oh yeah.
Flawless. You had to be the height, the legs, the hair, the like, flawless. That's all I got to say.
Yeah. Literally like physical perfection, basically. Yeah, I definitely agree. I think some dark stuff is, because if this stuff is going on with Abercrombie and Fitch, like there's got to be some crazy stuff that happened behind the scenes with Victoria's Secret.
What was the competitor of Abercrombie? It was Abercrombie and
Hollister or
Banana Republic American and Eagle. Hollister. I feel like it was like Banana Republic and Hollister.
Yeah, American Eagle definitely in there, but as well.
I don't. Hollister, my kids still shop at Hollister. I feel like the other ones they don't wear, maybe because we don't take them in there as much. Because I think those ones are starting to be kind of far and few behind around anyway.
Yeah, Hollister used to be my go-to when I was in high school. Hollister was like my favorite place to shop. But I will say I do go in. I don't go to malls very often anymore, but I do go to American Eagle every now and then. I feel like they're a little bit better than Hollister for me, at least. But yeah, back in the day, Hollister was my go-to place.
You can definitely tell like our age difference, because for me, it was like Tommy Hilfiger and Ralph Lauren. And now, like, well, Corbin wears Ralph Lauren. Pat took him in there for school shopping. He got some Ralph Lauren polos that look nice.
They do have nice stuff.
I don't think anybody wears Tommy anymore.
Yeah, I don't really see it too often.
It's funny how it changes. Because you remember when Fila come out? Fila was huge.
I don't really remember. I know
you were probably Fila. Too young. But, like, Fila, when that first came out, like, everybody wanted Fila. And now it's like you can get Fila like at Walmart. Like,
really?
I mean, no offense to Walmart shoppers, but I'm just saying, like,
right? Like, it's just not as prestigious.
They're
as
like, it's like the bottom of the, you know. Now I feel like it's just changed so much. I think Nike is just where it's at. Nike, maybe you can get away with some Adidas, but like all the other ones, like my daughter, she will not wear Puma or. What's the other one? It was Puma and there's another one. I can't think of it. Urban.
I don't know.
Say Urban Air, but it's not Urban Air.
Urban Outfitters?
No, it's not Urban. It's Amore or, oh my God, what is it? We were on a roll today.
Our memory is great today, guys.
Well, anyway, like in middle school and like elementary school, Puma was like it. Like you were cool if you had Puma. And then now it's like, oh God, no. Like it's got to be.
Yeah, I don't see too much Puma. I don't see people wearing Puma.
I think they're like elementary still think it, you know, because it's
right.
It is a little bit cheaper end.
Yeah.
But I know we're spiraling from your story, so I'll stop saying name brands, but there is another one. I can't think of it.
It is intertwined. This is very intertwined with this story. I know I'm trying to think of what it would be, but clearly my memory's not serving me today either.
Because I always thought it was like, oh, this is cool. And then she's just like, yeah, no, we are not.
She's like, no, mom, that is so not it.
Converse, I can kind of get away with. Converse is still cool.
I love Converse still.
North Face, they'll still wear.
Are you thinking of like Skechers?
No, I think it starts with an A. Under Armour.
Oh, Under Armour. Yeah.
That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, Under Armour.
She won't wear Under Armour no more. That's like so like left behind at elementary school.
Yeah, maybe literally a little bit I think middle school was like Under Armour's peak for my like when I was in middle school. Like everybody had Under Armour like little like what are those bags called? Were they like scrunch?
Yeah.
Whatever, I don't know what they're called.
The drawstring bags. Yeah. Charlotte still has a couple of those. But yeah, no, I think we can do like North Face, maybe if it's cool enough. Lululemon for sure, top notch. That's like chef's kiss to these girls right now.
Right.
Nike, maybe Adidas-ish. If you can't afford Nike, then Adidas is probably like.
Right.
Vans you can get away with. Converse you can get away with.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, like Champion, that came and gone real quick.
That's definitely in Walmart as well. And it used to be like huge brand, like when it first came out. Like,
oh yeah, like eighth grade, ninth grade, everything was Champion sweatpants. During pandemic, everything was Champion sweatpants. Now right. It's like, mom, what are you doing? Like, if it's
like, we're not doing Champion anymore.
If it's not Lulu, then where are you at? Okay.
Like, that's how it is, I swear.
Which or like, it's going to be solid with like no name brands on it, just sweats, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. It is so crazy how much fashion changes mm-hmm. And how quickly it changes too, like what's in and what's out. But yeah, this Abercrombie and Fitch was in for quite a while when I was like fifth, sixth grade is when I got into it. And then towards the end of my high school years, I feel like the hype around it really started to die down. But for a while it was popping. It was the place to be for shops. But yeah, it's scary how much of this darkness goes on behind the scenes at some of your like favorite stores.
Right.
Go
out of house.
Yeah, I mean, I know. I'm like, what's next? Like, what's going to come out next with these places? But yeah, even in some like cases in this situation, the victims had previously worked at Abercrombie stores. So like they were like the merchandise workers, or they had modeled for Abercrombie. And they were provided with these itineraries for the sex events that did not refer to commercial sex and instead resembled those often sent to models for photo shoots. So really it was like a very confusing situation for these victims. And some of them were as young as 19 years old. So it's like, they don't know. And they're not going to, I feel like a lot of them aren't going to think that that would happen or realize that that's what's going on because they were so young. And a lot of them were aspiring models. And they were led to believe that attending these parties would just benefit their career. Like, you know, and they were also told, according to the indictment, that not complying with certain requests for like certain acts would harm their career. So like it would like stop them from reaching their modeling goals. And they had to allegedly sign non-disclosure agreements when they were there because they couldn't share any information about those sex events. And they couldn't even share it with their own family and friends. And if they did, it said they would get sued, like obviously signing like an agreement. But realistically, if you think about it, if you tell someone, I feel like those actions that were happening at those parties are worse than you like breaking that non-disclosure agreement type deal, you know?
Yeah. I feel like for as many times as we said allegedly lately, we should just name our podcast. We're not Horror, Wine, and Crime no more. We're just allegedly.
I know. I wonder if I guarantee there is a podcast out there named that.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. That's actually kind of, I like that. So
I do too, but we've already picked our name.
I know. I mean, we could change our name, but it might be a little controversial.
A little confusing.
Yeah. People will be like, wait, is this the show I've listened to, or is this a different show? What's happening? But yeah, so that was that whole situation. He has not been sentenced yet or anything. They're still like, going through all the court issues and the trial stuff and everything, but just crazy that all that stuff happened behind the scenes. And kind of like we said, it's just sad to know that even in such public big companies, all this dark shit is happening. It's just really sad.
I know. It makes me want to like research other companies that have shut down and found out why they really shut down.
I know. And there's probably such a long list of them, which is just insane.
But before you continue with your next story.
Yes. Did you find the Abercrombie song? Yes, I remember that song.
Oh, shit, started over.
That's so funny. I totally forgot that that song existed, but yes, you're right. LFO,
they kind of came and gone.
Yeah, they were hot for a minute, but
they were.
Yeah, I wonder what happened to them. But that's so funny. Yes. Good memory, Lo.
I knew somebody said something about Abercrombie and Fitch.
Yeah.
Because I had the jingle, but I couldn't quite place it. You know what I mean?
Like, right.
It was there. It was lingering. But I'm freaking 44 years old, so things are disappearing as new things come in. I'm not all stable.
Oh, my gosh. That's so funny, though. I totally forgot that song existed. Good way to close out. Good way to close out that story segment.
Thanks. I just didn't want you guys to think I was totally losing my mind.
Never. You're never losing your mind. And if you are, I'm right there with you.
Come on in. The water's nice.
Right. Join ya. So for the last story I have today, these are all very like random. None of them are like conjoined at all. It's just random piecing together of three different stories. I should call this episode random crimes.
Random as F.
Random as fuck. This one was a recommendation by Here Goes My Memory. I'm actually going to edit
Sarah
that out.
Sarah Colton, I believe, wasn't it?
Sarah Colton, yes. She recommended this literally like months ago, and I'm a slacker.
Sorry it's taken us this long, but, you know, life.
Life, you know. Also, there's not a ton of information out about this story, so it's a shorter one. That's why I clumped it in with the two other news pieces. But it's definitely interesting, so I was not going to skip over it because this is definitely a WTF kind of story. So this is about a girl named Shelby Hewitt. She was
confused with Jennifer Love.
Yeah, very, very different. Okay. We don't like this Hewitt. So she was a millionaire social worker who was 32 years old. Her crime is insane to me. This is like real life orphan story, right? She posed as a 13-year-old trafficked orphan to attend three different high schools, and she tricked an adult couple into fostering her. Like, what the heck is that about? So she faked it like crazy. Again, she was 32 years old. She was a social worker, and she came up with this elaborate lie, and she pretended to be this like traumatized high schooler for about almost a year at the same time while keeping her full-time job. Don't know how that works. Dedication. I have to give her that. So her little aliases that she came up with, she was also known as Ellie Blake, a 13-year-old, and Daniela Blake Herrera, a 16-year-old. So she had different, you know, different identities going on. She conned her way into three high schools and a treatment center, even tricking a therapist and her partner into becoming her foster parents.
It sounds like one lady.
Here we go again. The freaking memory.
I need to.
What is her name? Oh my gosh. Oh my goodness. Her name. Natalia Grace.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. I was like, I know it's going to come to me.
I've got to research some more shit before I start opening my mouth.
It's okay. It's just one of those days, right?
We get there. It just takes us a second.
Yeah, exactly. It's, as long as we make it there. But yeah, so she went to these schools and students actually bullied her because they were saying she looked like she was in her 30s, which obviously was accurate because she was. But like, they would taunt her, make fun of her, saying, you know, things like white cracks early, which is just, it's funny because like, you know, it wouldn't be funny if she was a child and they were making fun of her saying these things, but she literally was in her 30s. So
I just don't understand, like, if this chick came into my school claiming to be 13, I'd be like, no possible way. I'm sorry, you're not 13.
Right. Like, how was there not more questions asked right off the bat? I don't really know. I guess maybe because they would never expect someone to do this, because, like, what the heck? But still, we gotta, like, look into stuff. So the reasons for the alleged fraud are still very unclear. There's an investigation that's still going into her ongoing court case. But the Boston Globe reached out to former classmates and some parents to question, you know, how she pulled it off. And parents were like super, super mad about this, which I understand. Like, I'd be really mad too if I found out like a 30-something year old was pretending to be a student and going to school with my kids. Cause, you know, what's the intention behind that? It's just super weird.
Yeah,
super weird. So, you know, a lot of the parents were like, you know, why would she do this? Like, I feel like betrayed. I feel confused. Like, this is just insane. And she's charged with criminal forgery and identity fraud. But she pleaded not guilty in December. But she's set to stand trial at the end of the year. So we can do an updated episode once news of that comes out. But according to prosecutors, she began her whole crazy elaborate scheme by pretending to be first troubled 16-year-old Daniela Blake Herrera. This happened in about the middle of 2022, shortly after she returned to work at the Department of Children and Families, so the DCF. She graduated with her master's degree in school counseling from the University of Massachusetts, Boston in 2016. And she was initially hired by the DCF immediately after she finished graduate school on a $50,000 salary. But she did leave in 2018, around the same time that her mother and her mom's father, so her grandfather, passed away. Once they passed away, it left her with a very large inheritance that was speculated to be about as much as $1 million. So it's not super clear at the moment exactly what Shelby was doing for those 3 years until prosecutors say she began the fraud in December of 2021 by registering an email domain, something at massstate.us, which intended to look like a legitimate Massachusetts DCF email. So that was when she started her scheming. So then after that, she then allegedly created emails for two fake social workers who would claim to be working for her. And the names that she chose were Michael Kornetsky and Michelle Delphi.
I mean, you can't make those names up. It's pretty creative.
I know, right? Like, she makes it all sound so legit, but it's just, it's wild how much, you know, thought and detail she put behind this too.
She must have just been really bored.
I know. And I'm part of me, because, you know, they don't know the reason or anything, but part of me thinks maybe she was having some sort of mental break when her mother and grandfather passed away. Like, maybe her resorting to feeling like an orphan, and then she, I don't know. That's like a huge mental breakdown. I don't know what happened there, especially for somebody who went to school for like counseling.
For sure. I mean, maybe she felt like those could have been the only two people in her life. So right. Maybe she, losing both of them, she felt she had nobody.
Yeah, I don't, there's so many questions, because, I mean, obviously the biggest question is why, but it's just,
and how.
It's just like such a super weird, interesting case. But prosecutor Ashley Pollin, she alleged in court, allegedly, she said that while posing behind the keyboard as one of these DCF workers, Shelby had herself admitted as a child patient at the Walden Behavioral Treatment Center and enrolled herself in the Boston Public Schools. So the treatment center helped kids with things like eating disorders, was kind of like their main thing. And Shelby Hewitt, she had a long battle with anorexia herself. So she went there for that, I guess, but she posed as being a child. I don't know. They have adult institutions for eating disorders as well. So I don't know why she chose to go to a children's one, but I guess it was just all part of her plan. But from there, she quickly began attending classes at Jeremiah E. Burke High School in Dorchester, where she stayed for around 7 months before then transferring to Brighton High School for 2 months. She switched the name from her original name, being like the 16-year-old girl, to this Ellie Blake, claiming to be 13. Her alleged con unraveled a week after she transferred to English High School in Boston. So this was her third high school that she went to. The scheme was busted after she complained about being bullied by actual teenagers that were making fun of her for looking like an adult. And at some point, Shelby had also purchased a $350,000 apartment, paying for the property in cash rather than needing a mortgage, because obviously she got all that inheritance money. So it's just all like coming unraveled, because, you know, she's pretending to be this high schooler, yet she's living in this $350,000 apartment that she paid for in cash. And she's working at the same time as a full-time social worker, which I don't understand how she did that if she was going to school and working at the same time, unless her hours were wonky. I don't know. But yeah, super crazy. So despite committing to this like whole fake act, she even like had braces put on her teeth, and she wore like really baggy clothes and like ponytails just to like really give her that younger look. She was very dedicated to like looking young. So even after all that, like, her classmates like really got on her for looking more like their parents' age than their age. Because 13, to be a 32-year-old and to pose as a 13-year-old is actually, would be like so hard to do for like everybody. Because that's such a huge like age difference.
I was trying to do some research on this back when the first time, like when we first got the thing, and I was trying to see if other people were talking about it, and I feel like I read something like she even like befriended a little girl, like a best friend, a bestie,
right? Which is so weird. It's like, it just puts an extra like level of ick on the situation, because it's like, why are you just in like a childlike mental state, or like why are you like getting close to little kids when you're in your 30s?
I feel like she, I don't know, without hearing like her talk in interviews, like live and, you know, stuff like that, I don't know. I'm getting the vibe that she had some kind of disorder, like where she needed the nurture. She was craving being nurtured, being taken care of.
Yeah, like, that's what I get, because it's like you have to have some sort of mental issues going on to do something like this. So the school where this whole thing kind of unraveled for her that she was attending, it was predominantly a Black and Hispanic student body. And they reportedly like would say to her a lot, you know, oh, white cracks early. So stuff like that. It was kind of like making fun of the way that she looked because she looked older. That was like the main thing, obviously. And as she was also posing as the fake social worker, the one, Michelle Delphi, she, you know, using the fake Massachusetts state email that she created, she emailed the school's guidance counselor to notify them about the bullying that she claimed that Ellie, you know, aka her alias, was going through. And in the email, it says, Ellie has a really bad day. Had a really bad day at school yesterday. She cried all evening and doesn't want to go back. She's really sensitive about people commenting on her face and how she looks older. It is a huge trigger point for her. And the fake her, Hewitt, posing as Delphi, the fake social worker, said that Ellie suffered from a genetic medical condition that prematurely aged her, and claimed that she was a vulnerable victim of child trafficking that now lived with a foster family. So just like crazy amount of lies, all these fake personalities going on. I mean, definitely some mental stuff going on. And after school staff worked out a plan for her in return, you know, trying to figure out how they can help this, you know, quote, little girl. The principal, Caitlin Murphy, she realized that some aspects of this student's story and like her troubled dark past didn't really add up. Mostly the thing that she realized and noticed was that the social worker Delphi's email domain did not match the correct DCF address. So that's when they were like, what's going on here? This is not legit. So in an email seen by the Boston Globe, Murphy urgently requested staff members to look at the documents that Ellie was registered with to be sure that they were confident that there was not something wrong here, something off, basically. She wrote, something feels like it's not adding up. And they were later kind of like even more so thrown off and felt this way because they could not find her birth certificate at all. Like it was never submitted and it was never a thing that they had. And Shelby claiming that her parents were dead, she was also able to enroll under a false identity at Walden Behavioral Care, the one that specialized in eating disorders. And at some stage, she did begin living with a social therapist at the center, Rebecca Burnett, and her partner, John Smith. It's seemingly without documentation. The couple now claim that they were also duped along with everyone else because they believed that she was a child as well. And they thought that they were taking this orphan in and helping her. But now, you know, they find out that she's this 32-year-old woman. It's got to be quite shocking. Other classmates also claimed that she exhibited very strange behavior. You know, she would randomly burst into tears in class and in hallways. She would drive herself to school while saying that her family was so poor that they were struggling for food. So it's like, how are you driving when you're supposedly this child, and how do you have a car even on top of that? But like, your family's so poor, they can't even get food. Like, none of it really added up. And there were a lot of like inconsistencies in her story. And classmates said that her tragic backstory meant they just felt sorry for her. So she did have a friend, Janelle Lamens, who was 15. She said, "Me and my friends felt really bad for her." Lamens met Hewitt while she was at Burke High School, and she introduced her to her friends, just as like the new kid in school. She had empathy for her. She felt bad, you know. She said that her foster mother didn't have any money and sometimes ran out of food. And she says that Shelby also occasionally slipped up and would alter her story, and like, things would be different. So she definitely exhibited a lot of weird behavior while being there. Now, following Hewitt's arrest in June 2023, Janelle Lamens' mother, Robin Williams, not to be confused with the Robin Williams, different lady, but she said that she was stunned at how the alleged con just had worked out, and as the case like just really leaves more questions than answers. She says, "To find out this 32-year-old is sitting in class with my daughter and other kids, and she jumped to three different schools, it was scary." Now, before her like whole plan was foiled, Shelby maintained this whole like facade by playing on the girls' basketball team, gossiping with her friends that were half her age, and handing in homework. So really just fully committing, all while she was still working as a DCF social worker full-time. Insiders claimed to the outlet that while it was surprising, there were a lot of flaws in the system. You know, some social workers can skate by doing like the bare minimum. So she really wasn't working super hard at her job, probably because she was very busy pretending to be a teenager. Some of her friends from college also recalled seeing Shelby shortly before her arrest, where they said nothing appeared out of the ordinary except for the braces that she had fitted to her teeth, which like, you know, you see some an adult with braces, which isn't like super common, you know. But a lot of adults do get braces, so it wouldn't be that out of the ordinary, you know, and nobody would think like, oh, she must be pretending to be a teenager.
Right.
Now, her like fake foster parents or whatever, Burnett and Smith, they said that they were unaware of her double life, and Smith was reportedly known to routinely show up to support his foster daughter at high school basketball games. So everything kind of crumbled for her on June 14th, 2023, when the principal, Murphy, noticed that not only did the email domain obviously not match the DCF, but a letter supposedly from the body had a typo in its logo, and it was from the Department of Children RIND Families, not and. So obviously not very professional, nothing matched up, so there was fraud going on there. So the school decided to call the actual DCF to speak with this supposed social worker, Delphi, about the mysterious case. But then they were obviously told that nobody with that name worked there. And due to flaws in the enrollment system and staff wanting to help, you know, just like this helpless teenager, they really didn't have any of the basic paperwork that they needed, including a birth certificate. The principal says, "I assumed we had some sort of information from DCF regarding the arrangement with the foster parents. We've had no reason to doubt anyone calling before which she wrote in an email to staff at the time. She says, but in retrospect, we should have asked for some formal paperwork. You think? I feel like that should just like be like procedure, but I don't know. Yeah. That's just me. So Shelby was questioned by police, and she initially claimed that Delphi was forging documents to encourage her foster mother to take her into foster care. But Burnett was later fired from her role as a social worker for failing to go through the proper channels and taking who she thought was a troubled teen into her home. But she still says to this day that her and her partner were also victims, which I agree. I mean, yeah, you should. If you're going to take in someone as your foster kid, you should do it legally and properly. But at the same time, you know, they, I feel like, had good intentions, probably just wanted to help this, you know, seemingly sad teenager. Yeah. And it, you know, they just didn't go about it in the correct way. But I do think that they were still victims in this because they were duped by this woman. The criminal defendant deceived and victimized John Smith and Rebecca Burnett, which their attorneys told the Globe. They said John and Rebecca are among numerous people who genuinely believed a desperate young person was in need. Now, Shelby reportedly later confessed to the con. She responded to a request for comment in a phone call by telling a reporter that there is a reason she pretended to be a teen, but her attorneys told her to stay quiet during her ongoing case. She said the truth will come out in time. But until then, her motivation for this like year-long con stays a mystery, but I'm sure, well, I hope that it will come out when her whole trial is happening and everything goes down. I'll see what she's sentenced to, but until then, we'll have to wait for an update. But the mystery remains because she's not
talking. Definitely, that's gonna be an interesting one to watch. I'm sure there'll be a doc on it soon too.
Oh yeah, like I feel like how could there not be, because this is just crazy. I get how there's not a ton of information out there about it just because it is so recent that everything's happened and she's not really talking or giving any reasoning. But I feel like this will definitely be an interesting court case, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
But yeah, those were my three random AF stories for today.
Okay.
Well, took you on a journey.
Hey, I buckled up. I was ready for it.
I'm glad. But yeah, that's all I have for you all today. No more random stories for tonight.
Well, thank you for taking us down this journey and keeping us entertained. And we're all going to be tuning in for Shelby's court date because we're all curious.
Right? I know. I'm very, very intrigued what will happen, what will go down. But
and for the Mendez brothers, hopefully they get resentenced and maybe the judge will just give them time served.
Yeah, I was curious about that because if they're being resentenced to 50 years to life, like they've only been in there, if they even got the minimum 50 years, they've been in there for like 34 years or something like that. So it's like, would they still have to serve 20 something more years? So it's like, they'll be like really old at that point.
Right.
So it's like, hopefully, you know, I mean, but at the same time, it's not like a huge win for them. But at the same time, they did still murder their parents. So obviously, crime, but there's that. But yeah, we'll see how it all goes down, I guess.
Well, but
yes, craziness.
You heard it first, hopefully, from Crystal.
Right. Hopefully I broke the news to you guys, but I don't know. It's been everywhere, so maybe not. If not, it's okay. I understand. But yes, that is all I have for you today. So you will have to tune in next week to see what awaits for our next episode.
And I will be tuning in. Hopefully you will too.
Same here.
And by this time, Halloween will be over. So hopefully you had a safe and happy Halloween.
Yes, hopefully everything turns out good and you have good costumes, good time, good company, good weather, all that jazz.
KK's coming over, so we're going to eat some treats and watch some scary movies. And
hell yeah.
Make it a thing. So
for sure.
Well, until next week, then, we gots to go.
Stay creepy, guys.
Bye.
Bye.